Well, good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Sir, my name is Daniel Enger, and I have the pleasure of being here today with you, Stephen. I thank you very much for taking time to talk, and I'm looking forward to hearing your story and to learning from you. I should say that today is October 20th, 2021, and we're here at the Gateway Center in Metro Atlanta. Stephen, my first question for you is a real doozy. Namely,
okay.
Please tell me the story of your life from the time you were a little boy up to the present day.
Okay, wow, that's gonna be a long story. I'm gonna try to keep it short. I was born Stephen Howard Gosch III, and everybody called me Stephen. My mom and my dad used to call me Boogie. And I was born in Lafayette, Louisiana. Then I was brought to Cecilia, Louisiana, where my mom is from, because we moved from Lafayette. And there I started kindergarten, and I was a pretty cool little dude, you know what I'm saying, running around the playground, you know, with all the children, and, you know, walking and talking to every little kid that come around. I was real energetic, so I played in any little game that was on the field, kickball, you know what I'm saying, basketball, monkey bars, and everything like that. Then getting into the classrooms, I was one of the smartest little kids in the class, I would say. Because in the first grade, whenever they would ask the questions on the problems on the board, I was quick to raise my hand. I'd be the first person to raise my hand. And I would always get the questions right and the problems. And they took me out of my class and put me in the class with some other kids. And the area where I'm from, it was mostly white kids, but it was, you know, mixture. But just some kind of way, I ended up with the white kids and a few black girls. And then moving a little bit down the line from there, every little test that I would take on the CAT test, LEAP test, state tests, I used to score like 100 on them. So I wouldn't miss like one math problem. But that was only in math because I didn't like reading too much. I would skim through the reading part and I'll try to get the right answer out of that. So let me know that I was pretty intelligent or smart as a little kid. And then I was like in a school play. I was Santa Claus. Then in the third grade, my dad died. I was 9 years old, so that took a little toll on me. And when I got to school, one of the kids was like, F your dad. And I was like, what the hell? And it's like, I'm a little kid. Like, it just, I don't know where that came from. But then that just threw me for a loop as a little kid. So I knew it was something about that. That's something that just stuck with me till today. And, there on, I kept on. My dad used to smoke some weed and stuff, so I see him smoking weed. And one day, my mom had some weed in her purse, and then I ended up going in her purse and I found the weed. Just so happened that day, that I don't know what I was going in there for, what, and I found the weed. So I took it to school and smoked it with some friends, and after that, I had to find some weed. So I kept on finding the weed, brought it to school, gave it to my little partner, which was one of my best friends. And he ended up one day getting it, somebody trying to take it from him by the cafeteria. And the vice principal saw this commotion going on, and the weed came out. And my name came up because that's where they got it from. 13 years old, 7th grade, and stuff like that. And then I get expelled, went to jail, so say, like, and seen the judge, and he let me go with a, you know, probation little thing like that. But he expelled me from all of St. Martin Parish schools. So my mom had to pick up and move to Lafayette area, which was Karen Crow town, in the Lafayette, you know, city limits, whatever, part of the parish, part of Lafayette Parish. And that's how I grew up in Lafayette. And I was in the seventh grade at that point. So at that point, I met some new friends, started playing. I tried the little football, but it was a little bit too intense, so I didn't play that year. Eighth grade came, same thing, I didn't play. Ninth grade came, I decided I wanted to play some football. So I started playing football, got me a job, met some friends. They was, you know, all kind of like the people that wasn't from the area, more of like little town people. So they, you know, came from different areas of the, you know, not just residents of that city or that town. And we all kind of like got together and, you know, formed this little group. So we was, you know, the boys or whatever. And started selling CDs and stuff whenever CDs first came out. So I was hanging my barbershop all day long and I would sell CDs. I was actually selling CDs for like 10 bucks and stuff like that, long time ago. And then I would go to school with this book sack full of CDs with a list for the children to pick out what they wanted. And I would go back home and I had to install my first CD player, my first CD burner, because they didn't have no CD burners in the computer like that. So I was selling CDs, working at Burger King. Me and Eric, that was one of my best friends. We got us a little apartment together when we first graduated. When we graduated out of high school together. And from there, went to a lot of little proms, you know, had a couple of girlfriends. I actually got my first car in the 10th grade. It was a Cadillac, '83 Coupe de Ville. It had rims and all, it was nice, tricked out. And I would go to school and these guys, I used to fight all the time because I was from a different area and I was in their little hometown. So I used to fight all the time, all the time, all the time. I would never stop fighting. Even as a little kid, I was known as the little kid that had, well, everybody would play at my house. You know what I'm saying? They would come to my house. I had the boxing gloves. I had the nicest bike. You know, stuff like that. Just because, you know, I don't know. But everybody would catch the bus at my house. You know what I'm saying? I remember this one time I got put off the bus. I got, I was suspended from school. And I couldn't get on the bus, man. And I said, oh, man, what I'm going to do? But the night before, I was trying to devise a plan to run away. And this was like in the seventh grade. So I'm like, man, I'm a run away. And then I'm going to say I got captured. And then they let me go. And I came back home. And everybody would be happy to see me. So they ain't going to whip me because I got expelled from school. Suspended from school, you know. So I say, that didn't work. I didn't leave. So I said, okay, I'm going to try to get on the bus. And I couldn't get on the bus. So I walked. My plane came back into action. I said, okay, I got to go now. So I went back in the house, get my bike out of the laundry room. Get my book sack out of the laundry room. Went to the back, get my bike, and I shot out. So I remember I'm riding past my school, man. These white dudes threw a bottle at me. They're like, get off the road, nigger. And I'm like, what the hell, man? And I'm like a little kid at the same time whenever, like, my dad died, you know, and this dude was like, F my dad. It was like, what is going on with the world? So I'm like, okay, cool. And I'm running away at the same time. So I get to this four little store, man, Poche's, where they sell Buna in and stuff, and everybody be stopping. So I see Kenneth them. So Kenneth, he come, he say, little Steve, what you doing this fall, boy? What you doing? It's early in the morning. You like miles and miles away from the house. So I was like, man, I'm running away. So he's like, no, you ain't running away. He was like, put your bike in the back. And he brought me back to the neighborhood, you know what I'm saying? Because he stayed in the neighborhood. So he picked me up, him and Velva. So they went, they told my mama, so just like I had planned it. Now she was all heartbroken. You running away, why you running away? So she couldn't whip me because, you know, I was running away. She, you know, it wasn't bad no more. So, okay, that was just that whenever I ran away. And now I'm in high school and then graduated and everything is going fine. And then after high school, my stepdad, he like was a offshore company. And he worked offshore, so he didn't have no problem with getting me a job offshore. So you had to start out in the galley. I started out as a galley hand and a BR hand, folding clothes and in the galley. So I got a good experience with, you know, restaurant services, but I still was on like an oil-filled ship, oil-filled rig. So I quit that job. I remember 9/11 had happened. I was going home and they had grounded all the planes. It was 2001, I remember, you know, because I just had graduated from school and I just started my job. And I said, oh, no, man. And then I said, man, I quit, bro. I ain't going back. I said, they're going to bomb one of these places or something like that and we'll be way out there. My mind was going all over the place. So I said, I quit offshore. And then I went back to school. I went to trade school. And got me a pharmacy technician trade and graduated in that. And I was doing security work, met this chick. We started hanging out together. I moved in with this chick, the first chick. That was my mama nurse. I had met her. And we just chilled. We, you know, it was cool. But, you know, time went on and I was on some little drugs because I was using Xanax and that made me a mean person. And I remember me and her falling out a bunch of times because I was just so free-minded talking, you know what I'm saying? I was getting upset and we fussing and this and that. So ended up breaking up with her and continuing on with my life. And I remember this one time whenever I was just graduated, me and Eric, we had moved into the apartment. And this occasion, my cousin, he had came stay at my room. And it was his graduation weekend because he was 1 year behind me. And I had just bought this car and I had two cars. I had the Cadillac and I had the Crown Victoria. So the Crown Victoria was my newest car, so I wanted to drive that the weekend. So, man, we driving the Friday night, shot out, boom. I hit somebody from the back, crash, boom, but it wasn't that bad. So the cop said, go park that car. So I said, oh, okay. I left anyway in the same car. Went party all night, zoom, zoom. Then that Saturday and everything just kept on partying. Then the Sunday came. It's time to come home. Man, that same car, same road. I totally lost the car, fell asleep on the wheel. I called everybody to come and get me. The police came and everything. The same policeman from the same, that it was that Saturday morning, that Sunday morning, that Saturday night. The same policeman from the Friday night that just told me go park the car. On the same road, not too far from my house, you know, same street. He had let me go with no ticket the night before from not even hitting nobody. From hitting somebody on the back, you're supposed to get a ticket. He didn't even give me no ticket. He just told me to go park the car. So the next time he see me, he said, man, didn't I tell you to go park that car? Yep, that was an angel, bro, because he didn't even do me nothing. And then they had another angel. When I'm in the car, I couldn't get out the car. So I'm trying to push the door. He come up to the car. I'm trying to unlock it from the outside. You know what I'm saying? Because the window was down. So, man, the little man, just in some underwear, come. And this part of Lafayette was undeveloped. So you could see for miles, you know what I'm saying? And, man, I'm like, I'm okay, man. So he was like butt naked, just some drawers on. I'm like, what the hell? So I'm like, man, I'm good. So, man, when I looked around, I see my nose was bad. I broke my nose. So I went back down, and I pushed the door, and the door just opened, boom. So I went to get out of the car. I didn't have my shoe. So I was like, man, where my shoe? So the shoe was right there in the back. I found it, put it on, got outside. The little man had vanished, and it was nowhere, like, it was level grass. You couldn't see nothing. Then I went to the top, and then I seen, you know, that's whenever I called the same cop, everything all come back together. And God pulled me through that, you know what I'm saying? And then I said, I got real depressed. I was like, oh, Lord, you know, I better go back. That's when I said I'm going to go back to the off-field, and I'm going to get away from town, in town, you know what I'm saying, staying in town. So I went back to the off-field. I started working for FESCO, Petroleum Engineering. And we tested how much all water, gas, that are all well produced. And I started working for this dude, Kevin Lanier, out of Texas. And he took me underneath his wing, you know what I'm saying, showed me everything. So then he just, out of the blue, told me to come ride with him in the truck, let somebody else drive my truck. And we went to the location. When we got to the, he talked to me about a bunch of stuff. Then when we got to the location, he was like, I'm not getting out of the truck today, no. He's like, you running the job. Man, I was like 23, man. And then there's like a bunch of grown men all in these trucks all over, you know what I'm saying? He's got a whole crew. So, man, I was like, what? He's like, yeah, here you go. Give me my clipboard and everything. Like, go, all of this paperwork and everything. Go do the job. Man, I come out there, bro. I do the job. I set all the trucks up, back up right here, back up right there, doing the job. Months go on, I'm doing jobs. These men like, Steve, we like working for you because every time we look at you, every time you tell us to do something, you doing something. You know what I'm saying? I grew up on a farm in Cecilia with my grandfather. So he was a farmer, and he was like underneath the head farmer of the potato field, which was the main source of income for our little town. And my grandfather hired a lot of men, and he was real well known around the town as, like, you know, a real influential man. And he had his own farm, hog farm, actually. So I grew up wrangling hogs and sheep and stuff like that. And we had a cow here and there, you know what I'm saying? But then we kill them too fast, you know, it was just to clean them out and then kill them. So we had a bunch of horses. I grew up riding horses and stuff like that, and cowboy, you know. So stuff like that. I remember we used to go pick pecans, man, underneath an orchard, me and my grandmother, and my mama got three sisters, and we all used to go, all the children and the sisters and the grandmother, and maybe somebody else that one of my grandmother partners would come, you know, girlfriends or whatever. We'd all go pick pecans all day long. We would have about 5 huge sacks, man. I'm talking like probably $1,000 worth of pecans, man. Because I'm telling you, it was like an all day. They knew we were going up. We were sharecroppers. So the people that we worked for owned a lot of land. So whenever it would come season, we would go pick up. And then we would give them a percentage of what they would do. Just like crawfish ponds, me and my grandfather ran like crawfish ponds, but we leased it, so we had to give them, you know what I'm saying, type of deal. But it's called sharecropping from where we're from. Same thing as leasing, like that. So we, that was that, and so I'm in the oil field, man. I'm doing good, man, and everything is all right. Then ended up going to jail. Messing around with some cocaine. Yup. And I was about 25, 26. And went to jail. The longest time I had ever went to jail. And it was a felony. So that was bad. Then I come out of jail. And I kind of fall back into routine because I'm so young. So I started doing some carpentry work. Because I used to do a little carpentry around the farm and stuff. So started doing carpentry work, got into that real heavy. Then I backed up from that because it wasn't too much, you know, insurance and stuff. You got to buy all that yourself when you're not at work, you know. So I went back into the oil field again, and I was doing hydro testing. So hydro testing was a whole nother ball game, man. And I always worked 24-hour call. Like, I never went back to 14-14 or 7-7. And I always stayed on 14-hour call all my life. And working like that, I had a lot of houses in different towns. So I would stay in different towns and meet a lot of different people. And it kept me, you know, alive. But I had my first child at 25. And she, me and her mother, it was like we met off of a one-night stand. So it really wasn't, you know, no love there. So, you know, I kept on messing with her. And when I came out of jail, she was like my girlfriend. So I went back by her for, you know, love and affection. And we ended up having my daughter. And then I moved them out there to Cecilia because I had to move back to my hometown by then. And things didn't work out. So she moved back to where she was from. And I, you know, took care of them from a distance. Then after a while, I bought a house for them. And we all moved in right down the street from my mom. Everything is going fine, you know. But, you know, I'm not in the country where I have a lot of things to do. So I'm starting to hang out with childhood friends and friends that's not really doing nothing to pass time instead of, you know, not passing my time like I would have at in my farm living. Because in farm living, things is built up all around you to keep you occupied in the right direction or whatever the case may be. So I didn't have nothing built up to keep me occupied in the right directions, you know what I'm saying? Everything that what I was seeing was entertaining the people and just talking about, you know, life or whatever, you know? And that wasn't a good thing for me, and that's what was led me to the beginning of homelessness. Like, not having nothing to do. So when I started not having nothing to do, I started drinking. The drinking and the friends. Then job started getting a different person. The job started getting a person that didn't have nothing to talk about. The job started getting a person that was negative because all he was around was negative people. And so his speech started changing from this intellectual person to this real shallow person that didn't have nothing to talk about because he wasn't doing nothing. So the people, it wasn't that they didn't see the person that can complete the job. They just didn't like the person. So they had to get rid of that person because that person wasn't the right just couldn't be around. So they had to let me go. You know, I never been fired from a job, but I always had to quit because of just, you know, the emotional toll of being pushed out, you know, shunned off. But I never been fired from a job because I always kept the job and did the job the way it was supposed to be done. So now I gotta come back home, and I told my girl, you know, I lost the job. And then I said, you know what, I'm gonna just start venturing off and doing my own businesses. So I started, you know, mowing grass. I do decorating. It's a bunch of different things I started. Carpentry, doing building dog houses and little such and such things. And a bunch of little projects, you know. But trying to build up around me so I would have something to do to keep me occupied. Well, now by that time, I didn't stop hanging with the people that was causing the malfunction in my life anyway. So I'm putting them into my life, but I'm not successful enough to bring them with me. You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to bring them up so we could all be up, because I'm steadily creating a good world, and then it slowly tore me down because I wasn't able to supply for, you know, it was just too big of a heart for, you know, what I was able to actually do. So it tore down my house, and my children's mom just got tired of it and started reacting back to the way I was treating them. And so fusses started, and I got kicked out. And when I got kicked out, that was it. That was back in 2012. And I've been bouncing around from group homes, from jail to a group home, from the group home, I might get a place to stay, but then as far as getting me back together, I'm working on that right now to build up my surroundings in the right direction, because me and my children's mom, everything is pretty much going the way that God planned it, and with that being said, it's all coming out to be good. And my children and mom and I, we have a good relationship, and the homelessness part is clearing up because Gateway has opened these doors for me to come into it, and they've been working with me. They're good people, and so far, this has been the best place I've been since I've been homeless. And when God came in and let me know that he was in control, and I let him take control, that's whenever all I do now is I remain the person that he made me to be, and I walk through the doors and receive the blessings. And one day I'm going to have enough blessings to where I can just continually bless other people. So right now I'm just waiting on blessings to bless.
Stephen, of all of the things that you've accomplished or overcome in your life so far, what are you most proud of?
I'm most proud to say that I'm not a proud person. I'm just a happy person. I'm not a proud person. So I do righteous things, and I do them right. I do them with a good heart, and I have the right attitude. So I'm just happy. Not a real proud person.
Stephen, you've gained a lot of hard-fought wisdom in your life from the experiences that you've had so far. If you were invited to share your wisdom with school kids in your community, giving them guidance to live healthy, safe, stable, and happy lives, what would you tell them?
I would tell the kids that, you know, when you wake up in the morning and it's time to go to school, you go to school. Because school has a purpose for you. When you finish school, you go to your house. When you get to your house, there's things that your parents or your guardian or whoever you know that's running the house has told you to do. There's purpose for you at the house. You need to complete your purposes so you can move on from out the house to outside in the world. And when you get in the world, there's gonna be a big purpose for you also. And to complete your purposes, you have to be level-headed. You have to be accepting. You have to be like you were when you went to school, when you came back home, because in the world, there's going to be temptation to be or to enhance you, to control you, to invite you to a new world. So when you get out there in the new world, find your purpose and don't rely on the outside world, because the outside world can't do nothing but influence you. You have to influence yourself. Once you stop influencing yourself, you ain't gonna make it. So never rely on the outside world. Just influence yourself constantly. And that's all I got.
Good stuff. Stephen, I'd like you to turn to today. In what ways would you say that your life is going well these days? Please talk a little bit about how life is good for you at the present moment.
Life is good for me at the present moment because my life has came from the sidewalk where people walk dirty. I was sleeping out there, and now I'm in a bed. I get food that's coming from the pot. I came from no money. And I've been blessed every day. I come out here to Atlanta to start a new life. And I ended up at the back of the building I was supposed to come into. Along the way, trying to make it to the front of the building, I got stopped. And I took a detour. That detour took me 2 months to get to the front of the building where I was supposed to be going in the first place. That detour took me to jail, got me in fights as a grown man in the middle of the street, had me with suicidal attempts, jumping, throwing myself in the front of the car. And right now, I have a job. I'm talking to people during the meetings at NANA meetings, and they're being influenced by me, giving them positive. And right now, I'm just moving forward with a bright-eyed, yeah. I'm just bright-eyed right now, man. That's it.
Stephen, what led to things going well for you today? How did it happen that things started going well? And who or what has contributed most to your doing well these days?
Number one, God. God has contributed everything. Because where I was, whenever I was drinking and drugging, it wasn't nowhere to be found. And then just being good, man, just being good is the whole key. Because if you're a good person and depression is hitting you hard, you just have to look for, if you could just give a little bit of happiness, God could come and send something into that happiness and he could get you. You know, you have to show a little bit of happiness and he could send something into happiness. Because without no happiness, no kind of joy, no, if you just mean, he could send it, but he can't get in it. You have to have some, you have to break some kind of smile, some kind of love in your heart, because he can't get in it. But I have so much love in my heart, man, that he just filling me with the whole shebang. You know, I am Holy Spirited, you know, because I'm just, my amount of love is just that much.
Stephen, looking ahead, when it comes to you living a healthy, safe, stable, and happy life, what are your hopes and dreams looking ahead?
Looking ahead, living a safe, living a,
what are your hopes and dreams?
My hopes and dreams is that I continue on, I'm gonna continue on living this life with the purpose of helping others. Because my magnanimity level for people is so high that I just want to care for people. And by doing that, I'm going to take my talents, put them on the front shelf, and let everybody see them, and they could pick and choose which talent they want and let them use it so I can give to others. And as long as I could do that, I'm going to be happy, because I don't need everything that I could make up that I need, you know? So I don't need it, you know? All I need is food and water and drink, and it's just as long as I can help others, man, because I'm happy. I'm happy.
Stephen, what are some of the personal strengths that you have that you draw on as you pursue your hopes and dreams? Some of your personal strengths.
One of my personal strengths and the biggest strength that I have is thinking. And knowing. If I could talk to you and look at you in your eyes, whatever you ask me, is some kind of way that God's going to give me the right answer to tell you. It's like I can't not answer a question. I have all the answers. That's just one. I don't even know how I got all the answers, but I got it. And then it might not be something that the analyst might say, but he would be like, man, how did you come up that close to the answer? And it's right, you know, but it's not the correct answer. But, and people I just love the strength that I have to brighten other people's days. Like, no matter if they're mad or sad, it's like I could pick for a smile. You know, I could pick a smile out of you, and I'm able to learn and follow and help people grow their things. If they need a hand, you know, I'm a good right hand man. I'm the best right hand man for people. So that's one of my strengths. You know, I could help you if I have it, or I can help you get to where you need to be, as if I have to pull you up the ladder, or you vice versa.
Stephen, what challenges and obstacles do you see standing between you and the realization of your hopes and dreams? What holds you back?
What holds me back is the same thing that makes me strong: caring too much. I want to talk to everybody, but it's not everything that I get into can, like, make my mind shift to a place where I can't even help. So it'll leave me stuck in trying to think of a way to help this person. And not knowing if the person gonna be all right once I leave them. But right now, I don't see no obstacles in my way. I don't have no obstacles, man.
Stephen, what needs to be done so that the challenges that you face can be overcome and you can realize your personal hopes and dreams?
The challenges that's in front of me, I need to just keep on talking to the people, keep on expanding my vocabulary so that they can understand me. I need them to just understand what I'm saying. And as far as believing me, they just need the right influence and the right person that can give empathy. Like, you know, I could feel the people. I just wanna, yeah, just talk to the people, man. I wanna talk to the people and just...
Stephen, I'd like to turn now to your community. Stephen, how would you describe your community in the sense of who are the people who make up your community?
People that make up my community, it comes from all different kind of backgrounds. You got city people, country people, you got a mixture of people, man. People that wanna work, people that don't wanna work. People that mad people, sad people, angry people. You got all kind of people, man. Liars, cheaters. You got all kind of people. And it's a lot of people around. It's a lot of people, a lot of different people. And they don't stop. They are who they are. Don't stop.
Stephen, when it comes to living a healthy, safe, stable, and happy life, how would you describe the hopes and dreams of people in your community? The people in your community, what are their hopes and dreams?
Their hopes and dreams is to get back to society and continue on being a productive person. And I think everybody is moving in the right direction. But as far as love, we need to find love, because love is needed. They need to find love. Love is not just a saying or nothing like that. It's an action and a well-being. It's the key to happiness. If you love, is the key, man. It don't matter what they got going on, if they to be successful or whatever, bro. If they don't have love, they're not gonna never be a part of the society. Unless you got love, you ain't never gonna be a person of society. Cause you could be productive all you want. If you don't have love, we're not gonna talk to you. So you could always, just like I said, you could work for it, but you ain't love, you're not a part. You just dead. You're not a part of the world. World is love. God is love. The world is love. Everything outside of that is nothing.
Stephen, in your community, what are some of the strengths that people draw on as they strive to realize their hopes and dreams and live healthy, safe, stable, and happy lives? What are some of the strengths of people in your community?
The people of my community have a lot of strengths. They have good paying attention skills. They have a lot of good men around here. There's a lot of good men. And their strengths is that if you can make them put the right energies in the right directions, you can get some good people. Because they're so full of energy. They have a lot of energy, but they're putting their energy into the wrong directions. They're putting the energy into the wrong directions. But if you could get their energies out of them directions and stop practicing some of them not right directions, but they all have a direction, but the big picture, you gotta constantly put it in their face. You gotta constantly put the big picture in their face to make them realize and focus, because they lose focus so fast. Because their energy is so much, because they get caught up into something and they produce their energy, they don't have nowhere to put their energy. If you could put their energy into wherever they need to be with a person with vision, they can be productive people and have them focus on love.
Stephen, what are some of the challenges and obstacles that make it harder for people in your community to realize their hopes and dreams and live healthy, safe, stable lives? What holds them back?
What holds them back is the falseness of them thinking that just because they're being productive is making them think that they're being productive when they're not being productive. They're just producing, but they're not being productive. They're producing money. They're producing items, clothes, jewelry, haircuts, appearance. They're producing the nice appearance, but they're not being productive as far as any kind of idea. If you ask them, if they don't have no idea, they're being pro- they're producing, but they're not being productive because they only producing. They just stay producing. You know, you could just like, you could produce children. But now you got to take what you're going to do with the children once you have them. You know what I'm saying? You don't have no idea what you're going to do with it once you get it. You can make the money, but you're not being productive with the money. So you ain't doing nothing.
Stephen, what needs to be done so that the challenges that you just talked about and obstacles can be overcome and people in your community can realize their hopes and dreams and live healthy, safe, stable, and happy lives? You just talked about challenges and obstacles for your community. What could be done to overcome them?
What can be done to overcome them? Well, they're actually moving in the direction to overcome them. It's just that sometimes others take longer than others, you know, because of little bitty things like they ain't let go, like problems of the world, like they might, you know, it's just they need to let go, like somebody to help them let go, because things that you don't let go create problems that you can't move forward, that you think you need to finish up. It's like coming into a shelter when you got your car parked outside and you don't have no insurance on it and it gets towed. Now you trying to focus on getting a car out that you don't really need right now.
Stephen, imagine you're a powerful leader, a decision maker who can really make things happen. How would you change the system to help people in your community realize their hopes and dreams and live healthy, safe, stable, and happy lives? Imagine yourself as a powerful leader and you can change the system. What would you do?
I would have to start off by nonstop arts and crafts would be the main focus, and I want to see you do some arts and crafts. No matter if you how you scribble and scrabble on it, I just want to see how you scribble and scrabble on it. Because if you're not taking pride in how it look, then I know something about it. But we're going to do that until you start painting in the lines. You know what I mean? I want you to love what you're doing. So once you start painting, I give everybody a picture. I want you to color the same picture every day for a week. And I want to see your mind take off every day. You could, even though you finished painting, let me give you the same picture and do it again. And every day, every time you complete that picture, it should be different. So you either gonna keep scribbling out the lines and it's gonna keep looking ugly, or you're gonna start painting in the lines and you're gonna start making it pretty. You know what I'm saying? You're gonna perfect it. So everything that they finished doing, they should perfect everything to be perfect. So if they could at least strive to perfection, they gonna be all right. You know what I mean? Because nobody gonna do the same thing twice if it was wrong. You ain't gonna do it not back to back to back. So that's was the back to back to back. Just keep giving them the picture every day. Like, you gotta focus them in on one thing, little bitty, but for a long time. You know what I mean? Because you got to get them to perfect. It don't matter about not being perfect. Nobody's gonna be perfect. But if you could strive for perfectionists, then you ain't gonna have no problems. What you gonna tell a person that's trying their best? Nothing.
Steve, my last question for you. Imagine that you had $1 million.
$1 million.
And you could spend it to help your community realize their hopes and dreams and live healthy, safe, stable, and happy lives. How exactly would you spend that money?
How exactly would I spend the money? First, I would have to establish a place for us so that we can never, ever, ever not have a place to meet up. So once I establish that place for us to meet up, I need to make sure that that place is going to stay there, and I'm going to have to create something to produce to help us be productive in our place, because we're going to need, of course, more money to keep our place there for ages and ages or whatever to come. And while the place is set up, the money that's left over is going to go to other things that's going to help us put the love out there, because we're going to need things inside the building to get the love out there, man. And then every time we're going to walk out the door, it's number love. So love in, love out, and then I done did my job. I done did my job. Producing more love. I'll produce more love with $1 million. Because love is already there. And if you're producing love with the money should come to for you to keep on producing love, because love is going to produce itself. Yes. It's going to produce itself. Nonstop.
Steven, I'm really grateful to you. I'm really grateful to have had this chance to get to know you, to learn from you, and to soak up your wisdom. Thank you very, very much.
You're welcome, sir.